Bees and butterflies and their pollinating partners probably have no idea how many friends they have at the moment in the human population. Cities are vying for Bee City USA status and encouraging people to make pollinator gardens. Then there's the Rogue Buzzway. Sounds similar to the Bear Creek Greenway, but it's a different kind of thing altogether. Let's hear about the Buzzway and the mapping of it. Three guests join us. Christina Lefevre is with the Pollinator Project Rogue Valley in the studio with me. Hi, Christina.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And we have two students from Southern Oregon University majoring in environmental science and policy who are helping out the project through their work in GIS, Geographic Information Systems. Seth Campbell across the table from me. Hi, Seth.
How's it going?
And Jarrett Taylor's here as well.
Hi. Glad to be here.
So, Christina, let's start us off. Give us the overview. What is the, first of all, what's the Pollinator Project Rogue Valley about for people who might not have heard you the last time?
Well, yes, thank you for asking that. We are a small nonprofit, volunteer-led and run, and we are working to inspire people and motivate people to plant and maintain pollinator habitat. And there are so many people, like you mentioned, in the valley that are actually working on that. And another way to get the message out and get people motivated, I think, is to show people the progress that we're making here in the Rogue Valley. So we have been around for a while, and we just opened an office in Phoenix last year. We share an office now with Beyond Toxics, which is a statewide environmental group. We're very honored to have that relationship. And so it's a really good synergy. And
seems like a really natural
yes.
Combination of skills and concerns.
It is, because they have a pollinator Save the Bees program, and so we're working with them. So this Buzzway project is an outreach idea for our community to get people involved. There's a website we have set up, a web page on our website where people can go and fill out a form, and we can show where things are going or not.
Are there some good measures? I mean, do you have good, hard facts about how much more pollinator habitat there is now versus a couple of years ago?
Actually, no hard facts, because we haven't really been tracking it, you know, scientifically. But this is going to actually address that question, I think, as we have things on the map that people, it's a self-reported. I mean, we're not doing a whole lot of checking. But they fill out the form, and it says what kind of pollinator habitat they have, what kind of plants. Hopefully people aren't spraying pesticides. We don't specifically say no pesticides, but it's inferred. And most people are saying that they don't use it, which is the best thing. I mean, if you're using pesticides and you have little tiny insects flying around, you're going to be impacting them, and it's not really good pollinator habitat.
So let's move on to the Rogue Buzzway specifically mm-hmm. and what that's all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, what it is a way to get people to map where their things are, but then we can look at where places are not, where there's no pollinator habitat. And then we can start talking to garden clubs, and we can talk to other groups. So it's a way to show people where it is, but almost more importantly, where it isn't. And it's just a way to inspire people as well. You know, we have the Facebook page, we have the website, so it's a way to get people connected and talking about it.
All right, and obviously some help from the students with
yes.
the mapping part of this. So why not either Jarrett or Seth, either one of you tell us first. We know that GIS stands for Geographic Information Systems, and it's been around for a long time, but can you give us a quick overview here, Jarrett?
Well, Geographic Information Systems, it displays certain geographical data and makes it easier to read than otherwise it would have been on a data sheet or somewhere else.
So you have maps instead of
yeah, it's just a visual representation.
Yeah. I appreciate the NASA T-shirt, by the way. That really
gets
us into the satellite aspect right. of this, because satellites really have helped the process, haven't
mm-hmm.
they?
Absolutely, and they continue to, and it just gets better every day.
And so, how, Seth, did you guys get involved in the Rogue Buzzway part of the project?
So we're taking maps and cartography and geospatial tech right now, and I think Christine came to our mm-hmm. professor and pitched the idea to him, and he made it one of our group projects for the term mm-hmm. that we would split up into five groups, each group being a different city. So Jarrett and I are in the Phoenix and Talent group. There's an Ashland group, Grants Pass, Medford, and Central Point. So we're all supposed to map the data that we had received from her forum and then present that as our final project as kind of like the base footstep for the whole Buzzway project.
Mm-hmm. And is the maps and cartography class a requirement for your major?
It is a requirement, mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And this is Dr. Trammell, who is your professor?
Jamie Trammell.
Dr. Jamie Trammell, yes. And I also want to just give a shout out to a previous SOU student, Ali Bucolo, and he worked with us last year for about 3 months, and so he created sort of the first base map, first structure, and then, like Seth said, then I talked to Dr. Jamie Trammell and ask if there's a way that we can continue that relationship with SOU. So really happy about this.
So I was going to ask about the confines of the Rogue Buzzway project, whether, you know, because you can define mm-hmm. the Rogue Valley a number of different ways,
yeah.
But it sounds like you are at least including everything from Ashland to Grants Pass. Is
yes,
that right?
To Grants Pass. Yeah, I don't think we're going to go too much down into the Applegate Valley because that's not Rogue Valley. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to, you know, follow that. And yes, I would love to get more Grants Pass properties on the map. Just to show where it goes.
So how far up the Rogue itself? Do you include Eagle Point, for example?
I would include Eagle Point, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were talking about the Rogue Buzzway project, one of the projects in the overall larger scheme of things mm-hmm. for the Pollinator Project Rogue Valley with Christina Lefevre from PPRV and Jarrett Taylor and Seth Campbell, who are GIS students, or they're taking a class in GIS helping with the project. Mm-hmm. They are environmental science and policy students at Southern Oregon University. You can join the conversation on the exchange if you have some information you'd like to find out about what's going on with the Rogue Buzzway project, or perhaps have some ideas about how you can contribute to it, or maybe you are already in the process of making habitat for pollinators and want to be mapped. Here's your chance to ask some questions. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Seth, give us an idea of the process then. I mean, when you get information, how you what you put this into to get it to come out on a map through GIS.
Yeah, so it can be kind of complicated. from the forum, we get I'll be pulled from the form and it goes into an Excel sheet. And then from that Excel sheet, we transfer it into a file that we can then put into a program that we can map it, which we use ArcGIS, which is used by the majority of people in the professional world. So
ArcGIS?
Yeah, ArcGIS. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we pull out a base map, which you can either do satellite or like a base map, which we have here on this picture. Mm-hmm. And then we go in through and add layers. So you can add a layer where you represent creeks or vegetation that these are already pre-put on by other people that you can download and add to them. And then we add our data in, and you can represent it by using different color shades or points or flags or anything in that nature.
Is the interface fairly easy? Because if memory stands to I believe that GIS actually predates the Windows computer operating system, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think they're updating it a lot. It is very complex. There's a lot of customizability that you can do with it. So mm-hmm. it's really just playing around with it. We've learned a lot since just taking this 11-week course.
I've sat with them and also Ali when they're working on it, and they've got two screens. They've got multiple windows open on each screen, and they're doing things, and you can tell their minds are working on different levels at the same time.
So, Jarrett Taylor, give us a sense of whether there was some head-scratching here. I imagine in any project there's going to be some, but, I mean, were there some real moments where it's like, okay, how do we reflect what we have in a way that makes sense on this map?
Well, the first obstacle that we've faced was just trying to shade in certain polygons to indicate where these certain pollinator areas are. And it took us a while, but we figured out that by using Jackson County's GIS and going off of what their tax parcels are, we can use that to shade in the certain areas that we want to indicate as potential pollinator habitats.
So in that case, you had information available to you, but mm-hmm. other places when you've been looking to include things in the map, you're thinking, wow, what would be the source of this, and is it available to us through through public access?
So we had to use other people's information essentially to kind of display what we want.
Mm-hmm. And so Christina, what is it you're specifically looking to look at? You want pollinator gardens and things, but what else?
Well, thank you for asking, because really what we're trying to get to is the connectivity, because it's great to have a small yard so that bees and butterflies and other beneficial insects can be. But if it's a small garden and it's isolated, it's really not doing the populations of those extremely important insects any good. There needs to be some availability of other properties. And we're so blessed to live here in the Rogue Valley, and we're surrounded by properties in the Klamath Siskiyou Wilderness, Cascade Siskiyou Monument, etc. And so they have a haven, but down in the valley, there needs to be some connectivity so that, you know, a bee or a butterfly, whatever, can easily find forage and habitat in a neighborhood. So rather than just, you know, my garden being the only one, I want all my neighbors to have pollinator habitat. And it doesn't need to be a beautiful, pristine, you know, magazine-worthy garden. There needs to be habitat where, you know, it's kind of untended. And can I use the word messy? Is that all right?
Sure.
My garden's messy. And that's where, you know, that's where the pollinators and the other beneficial insects are going to actually thrive.
So you're not creating the Pacific Flyway here. It's not quite that. But you are creating a corridor down
which these
creatures can travel.
Yes.
Which, as we talked to lots of wildlife biologists, that's really important for creatures to have places to go.
Exactly. So if people can think about their yards in, you know, that sense rather than, you know, how beautiful can it be? It can be beautiful in a different way.
Grab the headphones in front of you. We're going to take a phone call here in just a moment and invite people to send us some more. We're talking about the Rogue Buzzway Project with Christina Lefever from Pollinator Project Rogue Valley. And we have two students from Southern Oregon University involved as well, environmental science and policy students, Jarrett Taylor and Seth Campbell. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Jeff in Medford. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
Yesterday I was out in the manzanita, and it's blooming right now, and it was just humming with pollinators. It was really amazing, and I've noticed that in the past. It's pollinators love it, and it seems unfortunate that because of fuel reduction projects, the manzanita has been cut down, and huge swaths of it around the Rogue Valley. And I would like to encourage people to try to keep as much of the manzanita they have on their property, or for the, even the federal agencies not to cut down quite so much manzanita, because it's very important for pollinators as well as a lot of other wildlife.
All right. Thanks for that input, Jeff. Appreciate that. Christina, you've been sort of humming your ascent along the way. Tell us about the importance of manzanita and other things that people are apparently removing because they're trying to reduce wildfire danger.
Well, yeah, I mean, wildfire is a fact of life around here, so we do have to be cognizant of that. But on the other hand, I think it's very important, like you said, Jeff, thanks for bringing that up, that our native plants, our native trees are a very important source of pollen and nectar especially our native pollinators. You know, some of the bees that are out there look more like flies, and you've got, did you know you have 499 species of bees other than the honeybee? So we've got over 500 species in Oregon, and 499 are the non-honeybees. So having our native plants around is a really good thing to think about, so that we can have, and the manzanitas are, and the madrones, and yeah. So it is a conundrum.
Jarrett Taylor and Seth Campbell, in the process of preparing the map, have you guys actually gotten to spend any time around pollinators, or is it just strictly hunched over computer screens with numbers and maps?
I've been a gardener for many years, so I just love seeing bumblebees and, you know, in my garden. And so I know what's around here.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly encounter a yellow-faced bumblebee, and because they've seemed to become more common in the West now. What used to be the most common was the western bumblebee, and they pretty much disappeared out of western Oregon, western Washington. And I think the last number they've checked on is they've declined about 40% in their total population, and now they're only found in like Wyoming and in the Rocky Mountains.
So you were
states.
Quite bee savvy before the project even started.
Mm-hmm. And I think a really important thing that we should bring out about this project is that we're focused more on the native pollinators, and that honeybees outcompete with the native pollinators. And people have been capitalizing on the idea of save the bee, but they've been only focused more on the honeybee.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've gone to Costco, right, and mm-hmm. I've seen beehives for sale, like a bunch of them, and they were gone really quick. And that's really concerning to me, because if we're going to try to save our native pollinators, we need to bring the message out that we can't have too many honeybees.
So, Christina, this can put you in kind of a funny situation where you're saying, okay, we want pollinators, but we don't want necessarily every type of pollinator. Is that a bit of a minefield for you guys to navigate?
It is. People love their honeybees, and honeybees are amazing creatures. Honeybees are not natives. They came over with the European settlers in the 1600s. It's an agricultural commodity, if you will. I mean, people have them to pollinate the almonds and so forth. So we need the honeybees to pollinate certain crops because they're around all the time. But it is, as Jarrett said, it's a very good point. And as we get more and more honeybees, especially in areas where there's not enough forage, then it can be a problem, and we can lose our native bees. There are studies out. I just saw one. It was in Science Mag in February, I think, about it. So it is a conundrum. I tend to stay away from talking about honeybees. People think, oh, I'm going to save the bees. I'm going to get a honeybee hive. Really, what it would be the best is if you plant forage, if you plant native plants, because then everybody has what they need, all the pollinators and the beneficial insects. There's little tiny beneficial insects that people don't even know, and they're pollinators as well. So Jarrett is bringing up a good point, and yeah, it's a little touchy. Honeybees are also a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, I was meant to ask when you were talking about the beehives for sale. Do they include bees, or is the presumption that people will order them? I mean, if you build it, they come thing with honeybees, or you do have to go and order them?
You do have to go and order them. Mm-hmm. I think most of them come out of California. I think.
Mm-hmm. Or you're lucky and you know how to catch a swarm when it's mm-hmm. in the springtime. They don't come unless the queen comes into that hive, which may or may not.
All
happen.
Right. So this is a really important distinction. What you're talking about here is not building things so much as just putting things out that would be there naturally and hoping that the natural pollinators who are already here will show up and take advantage.
Yeah, I mean, you can have, there are other managed bees, mason bees and leafcutter bees. The mason bees would be coming out about right now because the fruit trees are starting to bloom, and they're very important pollinators. They're native. They actually look kind of like flies. They're dark blue and kind of fat and happy, and they'll be out for about 6 weeks. And then the leafcutter bees are another managed bee. A lot of people have the little houses, you know, you see the little holes up on a wall. So there are others. I don't have a problem with honeybees. I think honeybees are very important, but we just want to expand the conversation.
A couple more minutes here on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about the Rogue Buzzway Project with Christina Lefevre from the Pollinator Project Rogue Valley and Southern Oregon University Environmental Science and Policy student Seth Campbell and Jarrett Taylor. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone, email address jx@jeffnet.org. Seth, same question for you that I asked of Jarrett a few minutes ago. What was the biggest head-scratcher in just sort of taking this pile of information you have and making it into a recognizable whole?
I think just the whole process of learning how to use everything in the program was probably the most challenging part for me. Jamie's great about teaching us every step of the way.
Jamie Trammell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we pretty much just learned every step going through the whole term, and then towards the end of the term, like the last 2 weeks, is when we finally started learning how to finally started putting all of it together. Started working on the project. So.
Is it just this quarter you've been working on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
About 11 weeks.
And you're in finals week now, right? So.
Yeah.
All right. So is the work wrapped up, or do you have other classes are the people going to take over next quarter?
I think the thought is that Jared and I will be taking it up for our capstone next year, so we'll have a whole nother year to work on it. So hopefully we'll get a lot more data by then and going into next year, so we'll be able to have a little bit more filled out map.
Mm-hmm. Have there been things that you have seen come up in the data collection process, Christina, that you went, oh, didn't realize we could include that as well?
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to just repeat a little bit of what Seth just said, that, you know, we're here now and they're kind of closing down their operation for this quarter. So what we're hoping is that between now and September that we get a lot more data in so that they have a heck of a lot of data points to map. We have some.
Lots of people responded so far and offered up their information?
It's a slow process. People love it. Like, we put it out on Facebook and we have a lot of likes and shares and so forth, but then people have to sit down and actually do the form. It's not that long. But so by September, we want a lot of data to have come back in so that these young men can start working on that project. And so I think the biggest thing that we're going to work on, and they're going to help me with it, is how to figure out how to do the form in a more streamlined fashion for people. So, you know, it's a little clunky now. So by the time we have this, hopefully we'll come back on your show again next year, and we can tell you a little bit more about the progress.
Something like those fast and easy surveys that are offered all the time.
Yes, exactly.
A couple of boxes. How many boxes are there to fill out on a survey now?
Well, I mean, there's maybe, what, 10 questions, 15, and, you know, that includes your name and address. So, you know, it's not huge. And we have gotten some good comments, too. So I don't know how much time you have.
Now, is it completely voluntary?
Yes.
All right. So if somebody, they want to do a pollinator garden, they want to make sure that they're taking care of pollinators, but they don't necessarily want to be on a map. That's all fine and good, too.
Right.
Well,
sure.
We will indicate that, you know, certain areas will be off limits to people that they can't access because it's private land.
Correct.
And we'll indicate that some areas will be public and open access and free to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. All right, so very clear that this you're welcome to tromp through these areas, but not these areas,
correct,
that kind of thing. Given the age in which we live in which people carry very powerful computers in their hands all the time, is there an app that goes with this? I mean, is this accessible now or in the future on smartphones as an app?
That's an awesome idea. Let's talk about that, guys.
The quarter's over. You can't get the grades lowered now.
Yeah, we might have to get a little funding for that, but that's a great idea. That would be really fun to have. But you can pull it up on your phone, on the website or whatever.
So it's there now? It does exist already?
We don't have any map out there other than an earlier map of a small excerpt from the Ashland map. Mm-hmm. But now we're going to have some maps, some more maps, and we'll see those this week or next week after their project. And we're going to start putting some of those out so that people can see. Like, well, I have one that they worked on last week for talent. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be really nice to put out so people can start to see what we're doing.
And I can see some blobs of color here and there indicating where there are pollinator gardens and things like
correct.
That. Is the hope to have it look more like blobs of areas where there are not pollinator?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, oh, look, there's not one there. We need to talk to those people.
All right. So it is called the Rogue Buzzway Project. It is being put on by the Pollinator Project Rogue Valley. Christina Lefevre is a member of the Pollinator Project Rogue Valley, also Bee City USA Ashland and the Jackson County Master Gardener Association.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you stay busy.
I do.
And from the Environmental Science and Policy major at Southern Oregon University, we've been talking as well to Seth Campbell and Jarrett Taylor, who are making things work with the GIS program for this quarter and keeping this on as a capstone project for their senior years coming up. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. Thank you, Christina, for joining us.
Oh, thank you
thank
so
you.
Much for having me.